TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 603, and I'm Libby, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write reviews for 6 Degrees of Geek.
This is Tom, and I chair the Department of Visual and Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida, and also host the Screen Time podcast on Spotify and iTunes.
Hi, this is Yusun, and I am a costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
All right, Tom, hit us with the news. What do you got?
ABC has renewed The Rookie for season 7.
Woohoo!
Don Johnson and Philippa Sue have been cast in Dr. Odyssey, Ryan Murphy's new medical drama. Apple has ordered a series adaptation of Mick Herron's Down Cemetery Road with Emma Thompson and Ruth Wilson attached to star. Herron wrote the novel Slow Horses is based on, so that could be really good. Plus, Dame Emma Thompson. For All Mankind has not only been picked up for season 5, but they're going to have a spinoff called Star City based on the Russian cosmonauts. Monarch Legacy of Monsters has finally been picked up for season 2 with multiple spinoffs they're not going to tell us about yet. And Mark Maron, formerly of GLOW, has joined Owen Wilson's untitled golf comedy. CBS has a bunch of pickups. NCIS has been picked up for season 22.
Wow.
SWAT has been picked up for season 8 despite being canceled twice. The Neighborhood has been picked up for season 7. All the FBIs have been picked up. Mothership for season 7 through 9. Most Wanted for season 6. And International for season 4. And Elizabeth, the Good Wife spinoff, has been picked up for season 2. CSI Vegas has been canceled, as has So Help Me Todd. They've also ordered the Afrocentric daytime soap opera The Gates under CBS content partnership with NAACP. At HBO, Kit Harington has announced that the Jon Snow spinoff has been shelved because they couldn't figure out a storyline that people...
I know, because I did not want to see that.
Do. NBC has announced The Office, not a reboot. So far, it's going to have Sabrina Impacciatore from White Lotus Season 2 and Domhnall Gleeson from The Patient. So how weird is that, that Domhnall Gleeson's in a two-hander with Steve Carell, and one starred in the original Office at NBC, and the next one is going to star in the Not a Reboot. Netflix has announced that The Witcher will end with Season 5, which will shoot back-to-back with Season 4. Steve Buscemi has been cast in Wednesday Season 2. So purportedly, they haven't confirmed it, but the rumor is he's going to be the new principal of Nevermore Academy. Paramount Plus announced
that because they kill Gwendolyn Christie. I'm still mad about that. Continue.
Paramount Plus announced that Strange New Worlds has been picked up for season 4. However, Lower Decks will end with the upcoming season 5.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
All right. I knew that's Star Trek news. I feel like Lower Decks could have gone on forever. So it's kind of weird that they canceled that.
Yeah. I really don't understand it because it got good reviews. It has a devoted audience. And like you said, it's open-ended. It could go on. And the really sad thing, too, is that they told them after they'd actually finished, you know, had the whole thing in the can and were in post-production. So it's just going to end nowhere. They're not going to have a proper ending for it.
There's a possibility. There's a possibility that a letter writing campaign, kind of like classic Star Trek's, could help save the show and go. Netflix is going to be airing the new episodes of Prodigy. They canceled that when they were pretty much done with production. And they're like, oh yeah, by the way, you're canceled. Even though you're almost done. Speaking of Star Trek letter writing campaign, John Trimble, Bajot Trimble's husband, passed in the last few days. And they were largely responsible for Star Trek getting a third season. So...
wow.
Live long and prosper.
Mm. All right, on that news, I guess we're going to start with the shows. First up, we're going to talk X-Men 97. And I'm going to stress this to everybody. You don't have to watch the original X-Men animated series to jump in on this show. They have a relatively adequate previously on, except that there's a couple of details that they don't tell you in the previously on that kind of come to fruition in episode 6. And I was like, oh, they didn't tell you this, but I already knew this. But generally speaking, you don't need it. You can just jump in. They have the intro. And most people know the main X-Men characters anyway. I think the only one you don't know is the
Morph.
I think I was like the shapeshifter guy. And maybe you don't know Bishop, but they pretty much explain who Bishop is relatively quickly. So I think that works. Anyway, X-Men 97. So let's talk about episode 5 and 6. And episode 5 is called Remember the Name. And oh my god. So the thing about this episode, it starts whenever an episode starts off all sweet and let's do a picnic and a carnival and celebrate life, you know it's gonna end badly.
We're gonna rip your guts out.
You're gonna, yeah, it all starts off with everybody being all super happy, and Rogue is like, she's got her Rogue's thing is nobody can touch her. Nobody can touch her whole life, but for some reason, Magneto can. And so she starts a relationship with Magneto, but she's really in love with
Gambit.
And they've had this really long, no touchy, but I love you relationship. And so she's like bouncing between them and she doesn't know what to do. And I was like, man, like, pick one. And then by the end of the episode, I was like, are you freaking kidding me? So you go through the episode and there's just this whole, like, there's a surprise attack on the city of Genoa. And by the Sentinels, and it's like a massacre because for some reason these Sentinels are much bigger and much deadlier than we've ever seen, and they catch them all having a festival, having fun, basically with their pants down, and a lot of people get killed, and Magneto is trying to, you know, because he's leading the X-Men now, so he's really trying to be the hero and saving everyone, and he's protecting all these people, especially these orphan kids. And then it's just like they just slam him, and at least from what it looked like in this episode, because somebody's like, you don't know Magneto's dead. I was like, oh, he kind of got blown up.
He's not dead.
You don't think he's dead either?
No.
Okay.
I didn't see a body.
I don't know. They blew the heck up out of him. So it looked, yeah, I will say this, it looked like Magneto was dead. And yes, then
he's presumed dead.
Yes, he would be presumed dead. And then they had Gambit do this really super extra cool move to kill one of the main Sentinel. And as he gets stabbed through the guts, he's like, remember, it's Gambit, remember the name. And then he blows up. And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. That crushed me, mainly because I did not see that coming at all. And my brother and my nephew have been watching the old X-Men series. And they've been, because he wanted to watch that before 97. So he's been watching it with my nephew. And he and my nephew have been going, Gambit, remember the name. They've been chanting that to each other. And I'm just like, oh, no. This is going to be horrible when they get to this episode. So, yeah. And I did warn him. I was like, X-Men 97 is TV-14. You might not want Masai to watch it. He was like, really? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, and episode 5 is kind of rough. And so that's the warning I gave him. So I was like, pre-watch it.
Was Y7. I think they figured, you know, it's been a minute. We could probably put a 14 on this.
I mean, and this episode especially, the number of people that get like killed in the street is insane.
Yep.
They just straight up massacre a bunch of people in this episode.
Speaking of presumed dead,
go ahead.
Episode 6 focuses on, and anybody who knows read the comics knows this, Charles Xavier is not dead. He's right. Presumed dead, but he is picked up by the Shi'ar Empire, and he meets his bae, Lilandra.
His love of his life.
Love of his life. And so there's all this political stuff that we sort of kind of don't care about. She has an evil sister, and they want Charles to completely renounce Earth and his human ways, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I love the diss. They call it living in a Milky Way ghetto.
Oh yeah, they called him. He's like, you evolved from monkeys. We don't want to. She can't dilute her blood with people who evolved from monkeys. It was really crazy.
From that Milky Way ghetto.
But what tripped me out was everything they asked, I got what they were saying. But then they were like, we're going to erase all of your memories of Earth. I was like, well, then who is he? That means he only has memories of like the last 6 months. Like, then he's not Xavier. That doesn't even make any sense. And then the fact that his girlfriend was like, just do it. Just do it and show you love me. And I was like, no. Like, that was a red flag for me right there.
One of my Facebook friends actually made a case saying, well, when you get married, don't you give up a little bit? I wanted to reach through and smack him and say, no, dude, that's not.
You don't literally give up who you are.
You are.
Yeah, like that was insane. So, though I did like where he was like, oh, yeah, I'm a really powerful telepath. And he just like pulled everybody into this mindscape of a classroom. I thought that was great.
Very cool.
That was very cool. Yeah, so. I think both episodes were really well done. And then at the end, Storm gets her power back.
Yay.
Yeah, so because I knew they weren't going to keep Storm from having her powers very long. Yeah, I knew it wasn't, but it was just a matter of how now. Yeah, it was a matter of how long it was going to take. But yeah, I was super excited about both of these episodes. I thought did a great job of propelling, especially after the episode from last time.
That video game episode.
Oh my god, that episode was so bad. That was so bad. Like, it was like
completely. It was only different. Half the episode, and still, that's what you think of when you think of that episode.
Yeah, I don't even remember. Like, it was just such a bad episode. I was like, it didn't even feel like the same writers, because especially 5 and 6 are just excellent, excellent episodes. All right, let's move on. So we're saying thumbs up.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Next up, we're going to talk Will Trent. And we haven't talked Will Trenton forever, but really what we want to talk about, the reason why we bring this back is because after last season, the big deal is he finds out he's adopted. Well, he knew he was adopted, but he finds out who his mom is. And so he finally looks up some relatives. He finds out he has an uncle, and he reaches out to his uncle. And this episode is the culmination of that, where he finally gets to meet his family. And what's hilarious to me in this episode is that his Spanish is so bad. And he's like, I've only been Puerto Rican for like a couple of days. It was so funny.
Will Trent.
Yes. It was so great. And I get it. Because I was like, why is he so bent on learning Spanish so fast? But it's because, he wants to connect with his heritage. And it totally makes sense. And especially when he meets his family, he's like embarrassed that he doesn't know Spanish. And I get that. That's a really interesting character point that I thought that they brought in. I'm going to stop talking. Houston, you haven't talked yet. What did you think of this episode?
I liked it. The actual mystery of, you know, the murder was not particularly interesting to me.
I don't even remember what it was. I don't care about that.
Yeah, exactly.
The judge whose son is a drag queen.
Oh, is that the story?
And it was the sister that killed the mom.
Yeah.
Because she was jealous or something. I don't even remember.
She just was sad for being left behind. For me, I just thought, as soon as I saw they had played out all the characters, we knew it wasn't going to be the drag queen. So then I thought, oh, it's going to be the sister. And it was, and it wasn't even remotely interesting. So
yeah, care. So it's kind of like The Rookie. You don't care about the cases.
There was a great line. Let me see if I can find it. That the drag queen is also an attorney said that made me laugh.
Oh, right.
It's like, are you surprised? I'm a lawyer and a performer, and I have a rich romantic life. I'm a 5-season Shonda Rhimes show.
Yes!
that made me laugh. You know, the thing is, the characters on Will Trent are so good. And episode 5, we didn't talk about, where we find out Amanda's past, and it kind of everybody else's eyes. Really bad.
But I feel like the way they explained it, she was in a corner. I get that she levered all her people down. Like, I get how they were disappointed in her, but I also get that Will Trent was like, yeah, all right, but I still got your back. And he basically, so when he meets his uncle And his uncle's friends, they're like, "What, you shoot anybody recently, cop guy?" And he was like, "Well, actually, I did totally shoot a guy last week."
I shot him three times. I killed him. I shot him three times.
And I was like, "Oh yeah, he really totally did that." And I liked that he was bonding with his uncle. And then it was like this weird, awkward moment with his uncle's friends where there's all this tension and he didn't know, like, are we going to be okay? Like, am I going to have a relationship with my uncle? I thought all of that was really good.
And then when the uncle shows up at the house and then Nico invites him to the last minute potluck at right. the Anglo detective, we don't care about who's going through whatever.
I don't know. I literally skip his scenes. Like, if I see it has... I generally have an idea that his wife may have left him with the kids, maybe.
She's working through some mental health issues.
Don't even know. I literally fast forward when
he's
I see
like,
his face.
Don't know, don't care.
Fast forward. If I see his face, I fast forward.
I did like when Angie joined him at the drag club instead of Faith, and they picked up immediately. Ooh, these two have some unresolved sexual tension. I thought those characters were interesting. I hope we see them again somehow because they were interesting. It was an interesting angle, and I liked where they were going with, you know, with all this anti-drag hysteria throughout the country, which makes no sense, by the way. I thought that this was a nice shot over the bow from the Will Trent people saying, hey, we're going to double down and show these are real people with real lives, so don't just use them as your political pawns.
It was fun. It was a fun episode. That part... especially with the character who was the lawyer, she was hilarious. Really, really funny. So, but yeah, so this week's episode, I'd say was definitely a thumbs up. I want to see the uncle more. I want to see more of his family. I want to see...
It cast John Ortiz to play the uncle. I have a good feeling we'll be seeing him again.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I want to see how that blends with, God, what's the boss's name? She just got in trouble. We just talked about it. She got in trouble last week. Anyway, I'm blanking on her name, but he has a very mother-son relationship with her. Mm-hmm. And I want to see how that all kind of blends together, like how he makes his kind of found family thing work. But yeah, thumbs up.
Yep.
All right. Next up, we're going to talk Alex Rider on season three dropped. And
we have to do the public service announcement of warning people off of it. So
you guys are preempting my announcement. I can't even announce the show.
So. We're trying to warn them.
So we watched the first two episodes of season three so that you don't have to. So there you go. It was the most tropey, worst version of Alex Rider I have seen. The villain and the conflict that they introduced was the most two-dimensional thing. I don't even know how to.
Oh, I'm sorry that I yawned during your...
The villain was so bad. I was like, I almost felt like I was watching a different show when the villain was on screen.
I'm like, did they write this during the strike with Scabs or...
I don't... It's so bad.
It's terrible.
It's really genuinely bad. Terrible. And I love the first two seasons of the show. So it's so bizarre to me that season three can be this bad. Like, I have no inclination to finish it. Like, I've watched the first two episodes and I was like,
yeah, no,
I'm noped out.
I got further in before I gave up, and it just keeps getting dumber. It really does. It's not like it's, oh, just get over this hump and it gets much better later. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. And they kind of, you know, made, Alex like 150 IQ points dumber just to make the plot move forward
there's a trap that they set at the end of episode two that is an obvious trap, and I was like dude, Alex, what are you doing? Because the maid tells you in very specific terms where the bad guy is going to be. Why would the maid tell you that? Oh, and the ship just happens to be docked right at the dock where you are now. What are the odds of that? Because it's a trap. I was like, are you kidding me?
And anybody who thought they weren't going to gank the scientists who tried to extort them for more money, come on.
Yeah, no, it's so predictable. It's ridiculous. It's like you could write it in your sleep. It's that bad.
And then when he sees the scientists murdered and they plant a bomb, I was like, get off the ship. What are you doing? And then he goes, I'm going to go check and make sure the scientist is dead. I was like, his throat just got snapped. He's dead. There's a bomb ticking right there. I thought maybe he was going to grab the bomb and maybe try to dispose of it in the ocean or something. No, he's like, oh, let me check and make sure this guy's dead and be all like obvious. And oh, okay, I'm done.
Not only that, but the guy says you have the next 60 seconds. We see the countdown on it and he still goes to check the guy's pulse. Nah, dog.
No, there was so many things wrong with
that
this.
Was bad.
Anyway, wow. Yeah, we watched it so you guys don't have to skip this season of Alex Rider. All right. Next up, we're going to talk about Star Trek Discovery and episode 3 and 4. And the whole plot of this has been, it's like a big Easter egg hunt or whatever, or a quest. They're trying to find the next clue that leads them to the next clue, that leads them to the next clue. And I have to say, episode 3 was the most boring version of that. One, because we spent half our time with Saru in a council meeting, him being an ambassador and having weird energy with his fiance and whether or not they're going to announce their wedding and jealous Vulcans. And I was like, what does this have to do with anything? So that whole storyline just irritated me. And then when we got to Trill, you had the engineer woman that I don't remember their name. I can't remember about, are we together? Are we not together? Are we going to break up? And I was like, I don't care about this either. Why are we wasting my time on this? And then the stuff with Michael and Book, they already broke up. Why are you still pairing them together? They literally had a conversation where we have broken up and we're done. So let's all work together as a team and be paired together more and be awkward. No, don't care. That entire episode was a complete waste of time.
The one bright spot was Culber having... having the consciousness of
the Trill, yeah,
of the Trill. That was interesting because like it gave I'm blanking on the actor's
Cruz,
name. I want to
Cruz.
Yeah, Wilson Cruz. It gave him a chance to have some fun. And one of the first lines after the body swap was like, "Ooh, this guy really works out."
I thought that was funny too. I was like, "Oh yeah." I was like, "Did he have this?"
But yeah, it was kind of relationship works better when they're actively doing something aside from sitting around talking about relationships.
Thank you. It's, why are we sitting around?
Interesting at all.
Yeah, it is not. And I was like, who wrote this one? However, it was saved by episode 4, which was phenomenal. I loved episode 4.
Episode 4
a
was
lot.
Great.
Yes, that one. I was like, oh, thank you.
You said you watched the show since the beginning. Did you get references to where they were dropping in?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I, you know, it felt a little bit like, you know, that we know that the show is going to end. And so there was like a little bit of a, like a
nostalgia, you know, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Nostalgia thing about like, let's go through the episodes and kind of remind you of like our seasons and our episodes and stuff. So there was a little bit of that.
And really Michael's arc too. Michael's arc is really good.
Yeah. Oh,
but they didn't know. That's the really interesting. They had no idea.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, no.
I was going, Lorca, give me Lorca, and then they were like, Lorca's like, on a mission, and he's away from the ship. And
they're
like
aw. We want to go back to them, but we don't want to pay for Jason Isaacs.
Oh,
yeah,
come on. Exactly.
I thought come that too. On. I was really excited. I thought, oh, we're gonna get to see him. So I thought that was, you know, but no, we didn't get to see him. No, but as far as, you know, the time loop episodes, you know, we get. Yeah, you know, the time bug, but I mean, it's a loop, you know, and it's the, we get to see so many of them in science fiction shows. I thought this one was done really well. I thought it was done really, really well. It wasn't boring. It didn't make me like, wait, I wasn't like, oh, when is this going to be over? When are we going to get back into real time?
I was really excited about each one.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really interested in seeing which, where would they be dropped and how they would respond and learning about, you know, the time bug and how they were going to deal with like all of it, every aspect of it. I was very interested in. I loved the Captain America sequence where
I thought the same thing. It's like, I can do this all day. I literally said that to the screen.
I totally was like, oh, here's our Captain America, you know, segment. And I thought the fight was excellent.
Yes.
You know?
That was a good fight.
Oh, you mean Burnham versus Burnham?
Burnham versus yes. Burnham was that fantastic. Was that was fantastic.
I thought it was so, and I really thought it was very realistic that Burnham, in her situation as the rebel, would still try to protect Enterprise. You know what I mean? And so, like, it didn't seem like a very, it didn't seem like a forced
and
plot point.
And she didn't want to. She didn't want to mess up. She was so conscious of screwing up, she wanted to be like, I am not screwing up again. And so she didn't want to trust anything.
I loved when present Burnham is on the bridge, goes around basically saying, I know all of you, and says to Tilly, you think I'm gonna get, you know, kill you in your sleep. And then she just whispers, please don't.
and she goes, no, and then she said, like, I won't do it. She goes, thank you.
That was so good. That was so good. But yeah, I'd say the highlight is definitely the fight. And then I'd say also when the commander guy's talking to Burnham and he's like, when you first came on board, you thought you didn't belong. And he gives her that whole speech that he literally just learned like 5 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Like, and he gives her that speech, and it was so, like, her reaction to it was so good. That was just really good acting.
I really like Callum Keith Rennie too. I mean, especially after seeing him on Battlestar as a bad guy. And he wasn't Johnny One Note because he had that weird thing with Starbuck going on. But this is such an interesting role for him because he's got PTSD. Yeah. I mean, it's so easy to vilify him. He's got some serious PTSD from surviving the burn.
Right.
Right.
Every choice he's made, especially with how he relates to his crew, is based on survival mode versus what Burnham's done across the seasons of the show. So yeah, I really like that they did take it, even though I'm not thrilled with Saru, how they're dealing with Saru not being on the ship. I do like what they're doing with, is it Raynor? Is that the new guy?
Yeah, I think so. Commander Raynor, yeah. They're doing a great job with him. And I've seen him in other things too, other than Battlestar. Oh, yeah. So he
shows usually up in your favorite Canadian shows.
Yeah, he always plays a jerk, but he's usually a good guy jerk. So
yeah.
But yeah, I think that's pretty much, he's been typecast. That's pretty much what he's doing here too. So I loved it. All right. So we're saying thumbs up, at least for episode 4 was fantastic. And
yeah,
you can skip three. You can honestly skip 3.
Like, forget about it.
Just watch the previously on 4 and you'll be totally up to date. No problems. All right. Let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk 3 Body Problem and we're going to talk episodes 5 and 6. And Allison, episode 5, this is the big one. This was the one where...
Judgment Day.
Oh my God. This episode was so great because what happened in the last one is we know that my lord or the aliens or whatever have given up on humanity and they're just going to like conquer them, you know? Yeah. And this is a situation where you've got... got a real issue of like the people on the ship still, the civilians on the ship still believe they're protected by the aliens, that they're chosen ones. Mm-hmm. Except the leader guy, he knows that they've given up, and so he's trying to cover. And while at the same time the government is like plotting a big arrest, but they don't want to arrest them. They just want the data, and they are afraid if they try to go in any normal way that the data will get destroyed.
Yeah, they're not interested in the cult at all. They're interested in getting the information from about the aliens and, you know, what they've learned from them and everything else. And they know that if they were to actually do a conventional thing where they raid the ship, it would be destroyed. So this whole time, we've been learning about this nano tech that What's-Her-Face has been working on, and that they're, you know, the aliens are so determined to make sure she doesn't continue with. And we're really not clear on why this nanotech is so important. Why would it be such a threat? Well, in this episode, we find out.
Yes.
Because it turns out that, you know, what you can do with these things is turn them into threads that are finer than a human hair, invisible to the eye, and at the same time they are stronger than any steel. They can cut through anything, and they build this net,
like a web. Yeah,
a web Which they then raise up as the ship is going through the Panama Canal. And you're really not clear on exactly what is going to be happening. It's like, okay, is it going to stop the ship? Is it going to, you know, is it just going to, it, well, what it does is so much worse.
And they are very clear that there are civilians on board the ship. There are children.
Children on board the ship.
On the ship. Yes. And they are very clear on that. And they're like, okay, we're at war. This is what we're doing. And you're like, okay. And that fine wire just literally just slices people. Like, think of...
like a knife through butter.
Yeah, but like a string of them. So people are literally just
Yeah,
like...
well, because there's a network, like about every... I think I read something that said you're supposed to believe that about every 3 feet, there's another wire. And it goes the entire height of the ship. And when it starts... they're saying that, you know, I remember the one of the guys, one of the Navy guys saying, well, you know, why isn't it working? And she says,
like,
it is. And yeah. You don't realize it until the first human victim gets hit. And literally, I mean, and they are graphic.
Yes.
This guy is sliced in half. And it just keeps coming, and people start to realize what's going on, and they're panicking, and they never do show a child being killed,
which I appreciate.
But you see it, which I definitely appreciated, but you see the adults getting it, and you see the children, you know, there's particularly the one child on the deck just frozen in terror as this thing is barreling down on it, and you know what happened. So it just keeps going through this ship and spreading havoc and destroying people in graphic, horrific ways. And the more it's going, the more my jaw was just hitting the floor.
It's insane.
It's like, oh my God.
It's insane.
It just keeps upping the ante, and you know, and finally it gets to Jonathan Pryce's character, where he realizes he's going to die and he decides to face it.
Well, I think he was running. He was running,
and then he realized there was nowhere he was going to run to.
What was hilarious is he peaced out on everybody else, and he totally was like, "Yeah, you guys are on your own later."
Peace out.
He was trying to like escape. But what he jumped somewhere and like broke his ankle. And once he broke his ankle, he knew he wasn't going to be able to.
It was over.
It was over. So once that happened, then he surrendered to his fate. I just want to be clear that he was an absolute coward. That's all.
Oh, completely. Completely. When he finally did it, it was like, okay, fine. The thing is, they're not done once they kill off everybody on the ship, because then the ship starts to fall apart and run aground. And it's like watching somebody cut a really bad cake. it's like, I mean, it's just horrible. It's like this ship as a Jenga tower. It's just the pieces just start separating and falling apart. It's brilliantly done as far as special effects are concerned, but it's absolutely horrifying to watch. It really is. It's devastating.
Yeah, I agree. And I get the woman who created it. It's not Jen. It's Jen's friend. What's her name? I forgot her name.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But she's the one who created the technology. And she trusted this government guy to implement it. And then when she saw it, I mean, she kind of in her mind knew it was going to happen, but then when she saw it like really happen, it freaked her out, and she had all this guilt and all this, you know, angst about it, which I totally get, because she kept trying to get them to tell her how many people were on board, how many people were dead because of her. She wanted a number, and nobody would give her a number, which I think was good. Like, don't give her a number. And I love this episode because of everything that happened in it, but the next episode, the reason I have a problem is because intellectually, I understand that she's going through some stuff. Like, I get it. But I felt like episode 6, nothing happened other than her pity party and getting drunk and being a jerk to all her friends, because she's mad about, she's feeling all this guilt. So she feels like she can then be terrible to everybody else and just be a drunkard for the rest of the episode. And I was
this is not interesting. No, I agree with you. As far as as far as her part of the story was concerned, yeah, I was over this. It's like she on some level had to know exactly what was going to happen. She's
more better
the one
than
who
create,
yeah, because right. she's created the technology. So she had to know and she went along with it. And I get that it's horrible, but yeah, the reaction was
way
over the top
much.
And misdirected. What I did like about the episode, though, was the other part that didn't have anything to do with her, where they're essentially working out this the plan for meeting.
Jen was working on, yeah.
Right, for meeting the aliens, sending essentially... oh God! Now I've blanked on his name, but what's his name?
We don't know about that yet. That's the later episode. You're getting ahead of yourself.
No.
Yes, you are. Trust me.
She's describing the plan.
But we don't know.
Oh, we haven't. Okay, yeah. But they're going to send somebody to meet with the aliens, and they're going to do it by accelerating to 1% the speed of light by using like 1,000.
Nuclear bombs right
that are spread out at key points and then sending this
I like the plan. It was like acceleration and then it would slow down and you hit it with more acceleration and you do that until it accelerates to the right speed to be able to meet the aliens like 100 years from now or something,
right?
Yeah.
So they go about coming up with that plan, which sounded fascinating, and all of that was really cool. And at the same time, they're also have the bit where her friend who is dying decides well, he's in love with her, and he decides he's not going to confess that to her. He is going to buy her a planet.
A star. No, it's a star.
A star. He's going to buy her a star.
For 18 or $20 million, something really ridiculous, because no one can own a star. It's dumb, but yes,
it's dumb, but yeah, they're doing it to raise money for this project,
right?
So I thought that was interesting. The thing is, within this series, season one, it's a really nice romantic gesture and all of that. But it has, from what I understand, it pays off later. There are repercussions of having done that later on in the story. We are going to be getting a later season.
You mean assume that they're going to pay that off? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So not in this season, but in a later season, having done that is going to have a repercussion. So it's something worth remembering.
Okay, I don't know if that's a spoiler, but not.
It's not really. It's because I'm not telling you what it is, but it's just something to keep in your mind. Remember,
I would have remembered anyway. But anyway, let's move on. So we're saying thumbs up, definitely.
I still
think 6 was a little shaky. It was not my favorite episode. But otherwise, thumbs up. Next up, we're gonna talk Fallout. And we're going to accelerate this a little bit and talk about the first 3 episodes of Fallout. And if you guys are wondering why our cameras went off, some of these people, you guys try not to be spoiled. I just want to explain why cameras went off, because you're like, no spoilers for me. Catch up, guys. Catch up. But yeah, so we're going to talk. This new series on Amazon is based on a video game. So if you like the show, go play the video game, which I'm actually going to do. The updated version of the game comes out next week.
Timed with the release of the series, I presume?
Of course. So they basically...
Why not? Yeah.
Fallout 4 came out like 5, 6, 7 years ago, something like that. And so they're doing it. They're going to update it for PS5 and for the new Xbox. And so I'm going to get whenever the updated version comes out, I'll get that. Cause I was like, there's no point in me buying the old version when I know the updated version is coming out in a week. And I've played this game like maybe an hour. Like, I think I went over to Peter's house and played it for like an hour, and I was like, I don't know. But now that I've watched the show, I was like, all right, I can get into this. Like, I kind of like it.
She's in like the Flynn.
Yes, I'm in. So let's start off, Tom. Why don't you start off since you've only seen the first two and you're going to have to bail when we start talking about three. So what did you think?
I got partway through for three. I just didn't finish it in time for the podcast. So it just seems like any normal day in a series of fallout shelters, and we're in like number 33. And
oh,
you're
going to stop. You're not going to do the prologue in the 50s with the thumb. That's the best.
That's so good.
That's how it starts.
They start with a flashback. It's actually, it looks like the 50s, but it's supposed to be 21 something. Yeah.
It's supposed to be modern times. It's just that he's on a Western show.
No. When his daughter at the birthday party, that's not a modern show.
Yeah, no, because everything was confusing me, so I had to actually look this up. But it is supposed to be taking place like in an alternate universe where the whole 50s, you know, retrofuturism look kind of stayed and stuck. But the show takes place when, you know, the pre-apocalyptic stuff is like 2077, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what I really like though is that bit with his daughter, and she's like, "What's with the thumbs up?" And he explains it, and then the explosion happens, and she's standing there, and she's like, "Is it your thumb or my thumb?" And I was like, "Oh my god!"
If you're having to ask that question, it's
that
true.
Is not good. Yeah. That is not good. And he was like, "Oh no, it's just a fire." And then he's like, "Oh no!" And he gets on his horse, and you're like, "You guys are not gonna make it," especially because there are multiple bombs that are going off. And I was like, "Oh no!" That really just that made me sad. So it started off there. Now, Tom, go with what you were going to say.
Then we're inside number 33, and it's a perfect day for an arranged marriage for a young woman who's been brought up to be bred so they can repopulate. Kyle MacLachlan pays her dad, and then it turns out the groom is a plant from the bad guys. Boom, boom, boom.
I really wish they would have made that less obvious.
There was something about him that just looked like you're kind of evil.
Yeah, no, they all looked shifty as soon as the door opened.
All of them did. And I was like, oh, these guys are obviously not good guys.
They were all unbathed and nervous and twitchy and, you know, unkempt. And it kind of lowered the tension for the whole episode because I was like, well, when are they going to attack? Because clearly,
that's not a surprise.
I had a rewrite, which was everyone looks normal and everything looks cool until she gets to have the wedding night, and she undresses him and she sees all these scars on him, and she's like, hey, where do you get all the scars from? And then you go, oh, and then the attack happens, and that's when you reveal it. Because us as the audience being ahead of the characters is always a mistake. But other than that, I like the rest of it. That's my one big quibble with the pilot. But the rest of it I thought was great.
Also, though, I was really shocked at how gruesome it was in terms of, you know, the violence. You know, I wasn't expecting that. I mean,
it came from a video game, remember?
Yes. Yeah. I never played the video game. I did know it, but still I wasn't expecting it to be quite so gruesome, and it was really gruesome. So and
the same network that gave us The Boys and Invincible, so
good point.
Yeah it's that level. It's definitely to me that level. And that's fine, it is what it is, and we have that genre now, and this is that genre of gritty gruesomeness. And so I just had to adjust. I just had to know, okay, this is what I'm going to get with this show. So that was there was that moment for me, and I'm okay with it now, everything that I'm seeing, but it was shocking at first. It wasn't off-putting, but it was shocking, and that's fine.
I also think Kyle MacLachlan is obviously not originally from the vault, because when he kills the guy who's attacking his daughter, he kills him very matter-of-factly and very coldly. As opposed to everybody else who's appalled at all the violence. Like, they've never seen violence like that before. And he was super cool about killing that guy. And I was like, oh, he's also a plant. Okay. And that's also how he recognized that woman. I was like, if he had been in a vault his whole life, how did he know about this famous woman from above? He
Right.
looked at her and he was like, oh, you're blah blah blah. Yeah, I was like, okay, I get you. But I was very excited with Michael Emerson being on the show.
Ever so briefly.
I know. I was just like, oh my God, Michael Emerson, this is great. And then he gets his foot blown off, and I was like, oh no. But then they gave him a fake foot, and I was like, oh yay. And then they chop off his head, and then I was like, oh no.
Once he tells her he's taking a cyanide pill, banana flavored. I'm surprised this wasn't more popular.
That was insane. But let's talk a little bit about Maximus too. So
yes.
Maximus is an interesting character who I think this is his origin story as a villain or his origin story as a reluctant, crappy hero. If he's a hero, he's not a very good hero. But if he's a villain, he's on his way to being a very good villain. So, and then I want your thoughts. Do you guys think that he put those razor blades in his friend's boot?
I do not.
I did.
My brother thinks yes. What do you
think?
I think
probably, even though I don't want it to, but story wise, that's the more interesting thing.
Exactly. Story wise.
And considering what he does to his knight.
To yeah. be fair, I would have done that to my knight. So, because that dude was like,
he was a jerk.
He was a jerk. And
Mitchell,
like,
no, do not squire for Libya.
Wait, was that Michael Rappaport? That was Michael Rappaport,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
right?
That was
yeah.
Michael Rappaport as the knight.
Yeah. But
that was like a cameo. That was a fun cameo.
But the thing is, he literally tells him, we're going to string you up by your lungs and we're going to do all these things to you because you failed as being a squire and you suck. And he tells him all of that stuff. And I'm like, and he goes, oh, yeah, and bring me a healing thing so I'm better so that I can do all these terrible things to you. I'd have let him die too. Like, come on.
Hard pass.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
So I don't blame him for letting his knight die. But what I do blame him for is impersonating his knight. Like, that was on some shaky ground. Like, no, man, you shouldn't have done that. And so that made it seem like his ambition was greater than his intelligence, really. Because he
didn't really think this through.
He did not think this through at all. So he lets his knight die after his knight is like such a coward, and also his knight is like mad because the clerics are sending them on goofy missions and risking their lives to recover like toaster ovens, and he's like, and so now, so you find out his knight basically has no faith. His knight does not believe in the clerics, does not believe in the system, and is just out for the power. So once he figures that out, he's like, screw it, I'll be the same. But he's not very smart. He is not the smartest cookie in the barrel or whatever. Go ahead.
I kind of stops forgetting. We start kind of with three different plot lines in episode one.
Right.
And the fact that they got them together in episode two, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
You know, that was pretty good. Some snaps. Because other lesser shows would have waited several episodes for the
yes.
plot lines to converge. And I'm like, let's get to it.
And oh, and I like the introduction of the ghoul, who was the guy we see in the flashback. We see him become a ghoul, and his mission is the same. Everybody wants to retrieve the doctor, who is Michael Emerson.
Emerson.
And then it becomes everybody wants to retrieve his head because he just becomes a head. So yeah, all and everyone's fighting for it for different reasons. And so that is the main thrust of the story. And by the time we're done with episode three. Our main girl, what is her name?
Lucy.
Lucy. Thank you.
That's right.
Goosey.
She's in the custody of the ghoul. And so the ghoul now is like, he said, she's talking about the golden rule. And he was like, the golden rule is that you're always going to be taken off by some side mission. And I was like, ah, I see what you did there. That's a video game thing. So now, instead of being on the main mission, which is to get the head, he now has to go on a side mission to get some of the, I'm assuming, to get the drugs that'll keep him going. Because
yeah,
his drugs got messed up. So now they're on a side mission or side quest. And I was like, ah, see what you did there? That's pretty good. And it actually makes sense for what's going on. But then we have the relationship between Maximus and his His new squire that he got
his
dropped.
Squire.
Yeah, he got dropped a new squire, which was hilarious because he's pretending to be the other knight. Oh my god, dude, just sad. It's like this is gonna blow up in his face. Like I don't see how this is gonna end up well for him. But somebody other than me talk, because I've been talking this whole time.
I really like the look of the show. I love the retro, you know, the 50s look, the grittiness of the post-apocalyptic look, the fallout shelter. It's a little bit, I know I use this reference a lot, but it kind of, especially in the fallout shelter, it reminded me of like a Wes Anderson kind of a motif vibe. With the, right, you know, the vibe, yeah. You know, even the humor is a little bit kind of edging towards that. So I like the mix of the grit and the humor and I think they got the tone right because it's hard to do, I think, those inject that kind of comedy and that kind of absurdism when you have this something that's so gritty and gruesome and post-apocalyptic. So I find that it's a fun watch in a way that I was not expecting, and I like the look of the show. So you know, it's kind of glossy and gritty at the same time. So that's kind of really interesting. And I think the acting is great. I don't have a problem with any of the actors. I think they're doing, and you know what? Walter Goggins is amazing. It doesn't matter.
MVP. Ghoul, MVP.
You know? Yeah. It does not matter if he is a ghoul or, and he's got such charisma that like when he's playing the non-ghoul, like I was very impressed with his charisma and how engaged I was with his character. I really want to kind of, you know, I'm rooting for him, and because he's not the bad guy, you know, at this time I'm very curious to find out, because you know he's, you know, anti-communism but anti the, you know, the whatever his character is doing in because he's got that conflict with his wife, you know, he doesn't want to be part of the vault system or whatever. So I'm like rooting for him. I'm interested in his, you know, his opinion and his point of view. So yeah, so it doesn't matter whether he's the heavy or the protagonist. I'm just clearly rooting for Walter Goggins. and he's great.
Yeah.
So yeah, really it's a good show for me. I'm really enjoying it. And Lucy too. I think Lucy's great. She's British. Of
also
course.
Naive.
They're all
British. I mean,
yeah, she's very naive.
So naive.
I'm hoping she. Yeah, we need to. Get
she
her
does in. Grow though through this, and well, that's the thing that I like so much about this series is that, you know, I was kind of worried that they were going to go with a very cartoon approach to the characters. They were just going to be very cardboard, very, you know, okay, if they're fun and funny, but they're two dimensional, you know, video game type characters. And instead you get very invested in these people. They go to great lengths to flesh them out and make them three dimensional and make them characters that you can really deeply care about. Walter Goggins' character is a perfect example, because when we see him first as the ghoul, even though we have that thing at the beginning, we just assume, okay, well, you know, he becomes a terrible bad guy. And so if we learn anything, it's going to be how he became so awful. And that's what he is. And it just becomes more complex than that. He's not just that one note thing. And you know, the same thing with Lucy. She's all bubbly and you know, optimistic and wants to do the right thing all the time. But she, you know, grows. So she's not just stranded as this character that we've seen in the very first episode the whole time. And they go through that with all sorts of other characters that we're not talking about, like her brother, and friends who she had down there and things like that. So it's a fascinating show, and I love the fact that they seem to love their characters and give them things to do and give them an opportunity to grow. And I really, really enjoy watching it.
Tom, any comments before we wrap up? Go ahead, Tom.
It's almost like the four seasons of Westworld were a preamble to, okay, now let's see what we do with another IP and have other creative minds doing the story, but we know how to produce the heck out of this thing because this show looks freaking amazing.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And Jonah Nolan directed the first two episodes.
Yep. All right. So we're going to say thumbs up. Definitely.
Oh yeah.
And next up, we're going to talk Shogun episodes 7 and 8. And I want to be clear, it's not including the most recent episodes. So we will not be talking about episode 9. Just so we're clear, no 9. So 7 and 8, and 8 ends in the best friend, seppuku. Just so you know where the cutoff is.
Oh, Torinaga's best friend commits seppuku.
Yeah, seppuku. So just so you know where the cutoff is, that's where the cutoff is. Nothing past that point. All right. So next podcast, we will do the last two episodes of Shogun.
I'm looking up just to make sure we're 7.
And I'll talk about it. Episode 7 is basically, Allison, we talked about this, right? Mm-hmm. We were going over it, and now I just blanked. 7 is...
That's the episode where it's almost kind of a timeout where Torinaga is trying to figure out what he's going to do.
Oh, Stick of Time.
Stick
of Time, and it's where he's been presented with, you know, you have to come here and commit seppuku, and you know, your son has to commit seppuku, and you have to surrender. And so he's trying to figure out what he's going to do in this meantime. And has various conversations with various people.
Yes. Yeah, and one of them, including the madam, who is like, can I have a stick of time so I can talk to you about building up my brothel that I want to build? But really, she's like, he was like, well, why are you talking to me about this if I'm going to be dead in a minute? And she was like, well, obviously you have a plan, right? And he doesn't say anything. And she's like, because I'd have a plan if I were you, because, you know, you're smarter than me. You have a plan, right? And he's just like, And the way he reacts, I was like, does he have a plan? Like, I wasn't sure. Like, he looked surprised that she said that to him.
Well, he was ready to dismiss her until she said that. And at that point, it was like, oh, you're smarter than I thought you were. Okay, we're going to have a little discussion about that. And what's interesting about what she's doing is that she is really starting the geisha system. This is the beginnings of that. So it goes from just being, a brothel with prostitutes, and into this whole ceremonial thing that's now that's going to be elevated. And this is the beginnings of that. So that's I thought was so interesting about that scene.
Well, and I really also like that this episode also introduces the brother, which Tom is talking about, and the brother like double crosses them immediately. Like,
I was surprised they didn't string that out.
I was too.
At all.
Like, no, they did not. They were just like, yes, so you're a jerk and I've always hated you my whole life, and so that's why I betrayed you.
More tea?
I know, right? And it was just so weird. And then he was like, I guess we're just screwed. And he just kind of was like, all right, we give up. And his son, of course, who lived and who died as he lived, which is as an idiot. And I was just, that was the most surprising thing that happened, because I just laughed out loud. Like, when it
I
happened,
did too, but I also screamed out loud.
Went to the last drop.
It was just so ridiculously good. I mean, he had him dead to rights, and instead of doing it, he just took his time and then took a header on the rock.
On a rock.
And it was I was like, wait, did he just die because he slipped on a rock?
Well, once you see the blood gushing out of his head.
I know. And like I said, I just fell out laughing. I was like, yeah, he was so, and I was like, how did Torinaga, who is decidedly the most brilliant guy we've seen on this show, have such a dumb child?
Mama's boy.
That happens all the time when you have like a really good parent and then you've got a bad seed child, or smart.
I don't know, man. He was so dumb. And it's like he couldn't even learn. Like, his father was like, look, these are the rules. Follow this. Pay attention. Do this. And like, his father was like laying stuff out for him. And he was like, I don't get it. Let me just go attack this dude at night and it'll be fine. And I was just like, oh my, did you not listen to anything your father said? And so the only good thing that happened was, now that his son is dead, he gets a 40-day...
45-day or whatever grief period.
49-day grief.
Yeah, mourning period.
Which he thanks his son for.
Yes, he does. He was like, thank you, appreciate it. you're an idiot, but now I have 45 more days or whatever to plan whatever I was planning. So I have to give Torunaga credit too, because whatever he was planning, he was holding that so tight to his chest that I was like, I kept doubting it. I was like, wait, is he planning? He's not planning. Is he planning something? He's not planning. Is he
well,
planning
considering
something?
He's not sure who to trust because he's know there are traitors. He knows there's.
Yeah, but he also
he knows who the mole is,
right?
But he doesn't know if there's a second one.
But he also knows his best buddy is not the mole. He
this
knows
is
that.
True. But so, we see where that gets him in episode 8.
Well, I mean, I guess his friend. His friend ended up with a knife in his gut.
Self-inflicted.
Well,
because,
it was. But that's the thing. We find out that it was planned.
I don't think he. I don't know if he.
No,
actually,
it was.
I don't think so. I totally disagree with you. I think his friend figured it out like right before he did it. He was like, "Oh, this is part of the plan." Because the way that his friend behaved before that, if he had known, he wouldn't have said half the stuff he said.
No, it was a performance. It was he needed people to really believe that he had given up.
Oh,
and there's
I know
no,
that.
There's no better way to do that than with his friend. And if you notice, when he commits seppuku, there's like a moment where they look at each other and Torunaga gives a little nod.
No.
And that's when he puts the knife in. Because it's like, yes, this is what we agreed to.
No, and, I totally disagree with you. Because
okay, well,
I totally disagree with you because I do agree it was a performance. From Torunaga's point of view, but I don't think his friend was in on it until nod. I disagree with you. So
it was a plan between the two of them.
I don't think so. I don't think his friend knew because if he knew, he wouldn't have been bragging to all the rest of the people that, oh, he has a plan. We're going to do this. We have a plan.
Well, that's the thing. He, before that plan was hatched, that's what he said to everyone else. And then it became when it became obvious that there was still a faction, the generals who attended the son's funeral still in armor, who would not give up. And he was worried that there were others, you know.
Right. I get that. That's what Torunaga's plan
who
was.
Who would not believe that he'd given up. They had to do something more radical.
Except
and that's
that,
where they came up
except
with it.
That his friend is the one who egged on those generals. His
yes,
friend was
I know before they came up with the plan to
I
do
don't think no but if that the no but I'm saying that doesn't even make sense, because if the plan is to make sure that they don't do this, then his friend wouldn't have said that. It would have gone against the plan. My point is his friend was not in on it until that moment where he's like, because he's like, I'm going to do it. I'm really going to do it. And he goes, yeah, do it. He goes, oh. And then he was at, like, in that moment, he understood that was the plan. That's what I'm saying.
I think we can look it up and find out what the producers say, because there's a episode, so.
Anyway, I'm sticking with my theory. Go ahead. What did you guys
but
think?
But no, it was still shocking, though. It was still shocking.
Yes. I got in my feels, too. I was very upset about that.
And
I was
what's really upset. Interesting about Torunaga is it's the difference between strategy and tactics and the way that he approached it. I mean, he's playing the long game. He's not doing the short term, you know, basically between regular chess and three-dimensional chess. And the dude is really good at strategy. Because, yeah, and I'm going to stop. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yusin, your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you, I think. I think he knew, but at the end, I think that there was an epiphany, you know, as it was happening, where he was like, oh, okay, I am gonna
have to that's what
that.
That's what I thought
you
too.
Know?
Yeah.
And then they kind of looked at each other and they was like, okay, you got it. Yeah, okay, I'm right. I'm gonna have to kill myself. Okay.
You know, they do podcasts for every episode where they go into detail. And I think you might want to watch that one.
Oh, see? So wait a minute. Allison, did you watch it?
Yes, I watch all of the podcasts.
Oh, yeah. See? So then Allison knows.
I'm just saying from a viewer, I can still be right, because from my viewer point of view, that's what I got. So that's if I didn't get the other, then that's the producer's fault.
Let the Wookiee win.
Regardless, I thought it was an excellent episode. I thought I really did care very much that he killed himself. That he
I did too.
Himself.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was very emotional. I think overall the show, the political intrigue, the show has very little. I mean, it's just all political intrigue, and it's subtitled, and it's. I think it's hard for a show like that to be that interesting. To honestly, so I think it's a testament to the acting that we care this much about all of that, because there's not that much else going on in the show. So the acting is so strong, and then the writing. Obviously, Toranaga, the writing for his. Yeah. Wiles, you know, his ability to kind of figure out stuff is keeping us really invested. We want to know what his plan is. Yeah. What is going on?
And we forgot the very end. He tells Mariko, "Are you ready to do your part of the plan?
Are you ready to do your part?" Yeah.
And she's like, "Yep, let's do it." And I was like,
"Yep." So now you're just like, "What?" Now you know. So no, it's a great show. It's got a lot of. It's all intrigue, really. It's all intrigue, and for it to be subtitled, which, you know, adds a certain layer of effort that the viewer needs to put into, you know, and that sometimes can be off-putting, but it, to me, it just makes it even more I'm reading all of this. What's happening, what's being said, so that makes the whole experience very intense. So yeah, no, it's been a ride, and I cannot wait for the final episode to find out what exactly is going to happen. So, and how he gets himself out of this predicament. So very excited.
So we're basically saying thumbs up Shogun.
Definitely.
Way up.
Way up. It's probably one of the best shows that's been on all year. Definitely. So here you go. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them to tvcampfire@gmail.com. You can listen to us on sci-fi.radio, 6 degrees of geek, YouTube, and iTunes. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.